Welcome to the Razor's Ink podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. In our last podcast, Dr. Jonathan gave a prescription for fixing prime time on network TV. But what about after prime time and late night TV, which seemingly hasn't evolved in, what, 50 years? Is there a fix for that? So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, part two of Dr. Jonathan's prescription for network TV, the late night edition. And like part one, a solution has been under your nose all along. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
When I was a kid in the 60s and a teenager in the 70s, Johnny Carson was the king of late night. He began the show in New York in 1962 and moved it to Burbank in 1972. It was originally 90 minutes long and was reduced to 60 minutes in 1980. Steve Allen and Jack Parr preceded Carson, but Carson made The Tonight Show a household name.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, here's Johnny!
Well, this is a nice day today. Beautiful weather out here in California. And this is the kind of year, time of year, that Americans kind of set aside their differences and join in a common celebration. Even in New York City, where they're celebrating the bicentennial, the sanitation workers have agreed to pick up the garbage every 200 years. If you think back to 1776, what great men of wisdom we had then, Jefferson, Washington, Franklin, and today, oh, why spoil the celebration?
Carson played to middle America. The show wasn't edgy. He had his own proprietary characters like the amazing Karnick, the guy in the turban, if you recall. Carson's sidekicks were co-host Ed McMahon and bandleader Doc Severinsen. The show was well known for its guest hosts filling in for Johnny. The top two included Jay Leno and Joan Rivers. There was some bad blood between Rivers and Carson later. Check the YouTube video where Joan visits Carson's grave and has some final words for him. Comedians getting their career break on The Tonight Show included Jay Leno, Jerry Seinfeld, Gary Shandling, Eddie Murphy, Jim Carrey, Ellen DeGeneres, to name a few. It's said the actor Burt Reynolds appeared on The Tonight Show more than anybody, with a total of 61 appearances.
I would say more than any movie I ever did. The Carson Show made my career.
But I haven't seen you for a long time.
Well, as you can see by my outfit, I'm a doorman at the Manischewitz Winery.
After 31 years in 1992, Carson's final show had no guests. And his last words included,
I can only tell you that it has been an honor and a privilege to come into your homes all these years and entertain you. And I hope when I find something that I want to do and I think you will like and come back, that you'll be as gracious inviting me into your home as you have been. I bid you a very heartfelt good night.
Jay Leno took over for Carson. David Letterman began a competing show on CBS. I gave up watching just about the time Leno took over for Carson. Late night just wasn't as good as a late night movie I've seen 100 times. Enough about late night television, except to say the audience has been on the decline for years. The traditional late night formula is in the truck stop toilet and needs a reboot. I'm finished with this worn out late night format. Let's talk about the future of late night television by speaking about the past. Introducing Hugh Hefner's Playboy After Dark, which ran between 1969 and 1970 for a total of 52 episodes. Playboy After Dark aired on late nights, usually around 11 p.m. or midnight on weeknights, depending upon the local television schedule and network. The show was filmed on the Los Angeles CBS lot and at KTLA, a local television station. This isn't a traditional late-night talk show. The show begins with a limousine pulling up to a beautiful condo tower. We enter the elevator with 42 floors, the 42nd marked with the unmistakable Playboy symbol, denoting the penthouse. theme music is very sophisticated, like the show, subtly titled Playboy's Theme, and composed by jazz pianist Cy Coleman, composer of Sinatra's Witchcraft and other standards. The sophisticated instrumental became a hit in its own right and has been covered by Henry Mancini, Lionel Hampton, and many others. The syndicated show is formatted like a Playboy Mansion cocktail party and presented as if viewers were invited guests. Wearing a tuxedo, smoking a pipe, and martini in hand, Hefner would welcome you into his home. Barbie Benton, Nancy Roberts, and Chris Cranston were the beautiful hostesses. The concept of the show was to make us feel like we were attending the party, but in reality, we were all voyeurs, which was the genius. We could wander about anonymously and listen into Hughes' conversations with everybody from novelists to actors, musicians, politicians, comedians, and anybody who was relevant at the time. Playboy was a high-flying enterprise with a magazine, nightclubs, and a reputation as a cultural tastemaker. The Playboy brand was dialed into pop culture. Here's a partial list of the guests over both seasons. Listen to the variety and ask if you would like to be invited to the party. I would. Season 1. Bill Cosby, Tony Bennett, Roman Polanski, and Sharon Tate. Joan Baez, Sammy Davis Jr., Jerry Lewis, Don Rickles, The Grateful Dead. Gore Vidal, Lou Rawls, Soupy Sales, James Brown, Three Dog Night, Pete Seeger, Canned Heat, Marvin Gaye, The Byrds, Paul Mazursky, The Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, Michael Caine, Mort Saul, Johnny Mathis, The Chambers Brothers, Bill Russell, Steppenwolf, Deep Purple.
How did you guys all get together? You haven't been together as a group very long now. I understand that you all moved into a house together, kind of so you could live together and work together, but it didn't work out. What?
It was haunted.
The house was haunted?
Yeah, sure. Now you really.
And you really believe it was haunted?
I know it was haunted. I saw with my own glasses.
I'm not going to ask you the circumstances under which it became possible for you to see all those strange manifestations, but... Okay. I'll tell you what I would like to hear about, though. You had your first big hit was Hush.
That's right.
And yeah. I think that it would really groove the kids if you did that.
Season 2. Sonny and Cher, Ike and Tina Turner, Patty Duke, Tony Bennett, Grand Funk Railroad, Tony Randall, Joe Cocker, Linda Ronstadt, Milton Berle, Smokey Robinson, Trini Lopez, see my podcast, Trini Lopez, Sarah Vaughan, Country Joe and the Fish. I had an opportunity to meet the drummer of Country Joe and the Fish. He's a successful real estate appraiser today. Mel Torme, Bill Medley, and George Carlin.
George, why is it that New York accents always seem to get a laugh?
Well, they don't get a laugh in New York. How do your Southern accents get a laugh in New York? Hi, how are you? Get them out of here. I don't know, New York accents have always sounded kind of stupid a little bit. You know, this guy always sounds a little stupid. When I grew up in New York, one thing we noticed early in life was that all New York policemen had the same voice. Yeah. Have you ever noticed it? Yes. Identical. If you ask them for directions, or a policeman on television describing an arrest, where they love to use big words.
My partner and I, Patrolman Ryan, we observed the accusee emerging from the apartment house. We surveilled the perpetrator and arrested him on a 501.
What's a 501?
That was the number of the apartment house.
Do you think a 60-minute show, less commercials, filled with talent like I mentioned, will fly fast? It did and left us wanting for the next episode or party. Hear that, network programming executives? Viewers left wanting more, waiting for the next episode? Brand loyalty, eyeballs, equal ad sales. Here's my pitch, network television. Fire your late night host and brand a new show titled Cocktail Party. It will run weeknights at 11 with a different host each show. A celebrity, man or woman. We can build a set which can resemble a variety of different designs, resembling the personality of the host. We'll mount cameras and mics strategically to pick up every conversation and movement of the guests, which I suggest will not be scripted. I suggest we begin the episode with a limo picking up each of the guests, and we listen into the chit-chat about current affairs, gossip, or even the host. The celebrity guests approach the door and are greeted by the celebrity hosts. Perhaps we don't even know who the celebrity host is. A surprise to the viewers. The viewers will mingle throughout the cocktail party while following a Steadicam, listening into a variety of interesting conversations, and perhaps catch a glimpse of celebrities sneaking off together or alone in a nook. This could be scripted, of course, but think about allowing the conversations and movements of the guests to occur organically. Don't worry, there's always the editing room. If a drink is thrown in the face, foul language hurled about, or a fistfight erupts. If I'm producing, I'm striking ratings gold and will convince the unruly participants to let me roll with the footage. It will only garner them PR. Remember, folks, being a guest on Cocktail Party is a paid gig for the celebrity, and they'll play it to the hilt. Think of the PR possibilities if the viewers believe the scripted escapades or gossip is truth. Cocktail Party will resurrect stagnant careers and create new ones. Sound like a better way to watch late night? Maybe with a drink in your hand or joint? It does to me. Just to titillize you, pun intended, I met retired Playboy Club bunnies. The original Playboy Club was on Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood. I drove by it all the time to and from film school. Playboy bunnies worked hard. They memorized 140 drink recipes, served drinks in a very uncomfortable, almost squatting fashion, never leaning in, and fraternization with the customers meant termination. The Playboy bunny costume received a U.S. patent in 1963, making it the first service uniform patented by the U.S. Patent Office. Can you imagine working around those drunken, entitled male Playboy keycard members on expense accounts? Imagine the pedigree and blue blood names on those business cards folded inside the tip. I'll bet you bunnies held on to those business cards as keepsake mementos. Write a book, darling. You earn the right to tell all. If you want to visit Hugh Hefner and pay your respects, his crypt is not accidentally above Marilyn Monroe's crypt at Westwood Memorial Park. Now that I think about it, I wonder if the crypt below Marilyn might be available. I'll have to look into that. I love network television, so I offer up a suggestion to save late night television. Lest I forget, network executives, call me for my routing and account number if you employ my idea. It's golden, and trust me, your job depends upon you panning for gold. Aren't you fortunate in finding the Razors Inc. podcast? Until I see you next time, please leave behind a soft footprint, a big tip for the bunny, and I'll see you soon at the premiere of Cocktail Party. I may be the guy in the red vest tending bar and garnering research for my next story. Class is dismissed.
And if you're a music fan at all, Google Music Playboy After Dark. You'll be rewarded with some unbelievable performances by legendary music acts. No lip-synced garbage, all playing real instruments, live, occasional mistakes and all. You've been listening to the Razors Inc. podcast with Jonathan Farini. Be sure to check out Jonathan's collection of fiction at the Jonathan B. Farini Story Collection at jonathanfarini.com. There you'll find everything from drama to romance, something for every reader, including his latest short story, which takes place in the city by the bay, Our Matchmaker Was an Autonomous Car, recently published by Literary Heist. That's jonathanfarini.com, Farini with two R's, one N. Or drop an email to razorsincpodcast@gmail.com.